Radio.
Another informative episode of Satellite Nation. Satellite Nation is a weekly call-in show geared towards the hobby side of all things television. Brought to you by Satellite Guys Radio. Now here are your hosts, Michael and Brian.
Hello, hello everybody. You're tuned in to another episode of Satellite Nation. My name is Michael Graves, K-E-4-E-S-T.
And I'm Brian Gould, Titanium Satellite. Welcome to Satellite Nation. Tonight, we welcome the addition of a new weekly news segment by Dave, that's Wally Heights, from gotcband.com. And then later in the show, we're going to be talking about SDRs. What are SDRs? Well, that would be Software Defined Radio. And we're going to be joined by a very special guest.
Right. We're going to have Mario Filippi on, or Filippi. Call sign is N2HUN, Hotel Uniform November. Now, he's been a shortwave listener and a ham radio operator and scanner enthusiast and all that good stuff for over 37 years. He enjoys everything from DC to daylight, just like I do. Now this is a guy, Brian, that has had more radios than he's had pairs of shoes. So he's got to be great.
Wow.
Looking forward to him eating toys.
So does that mean he's had a lot of radios or not many shoes?
I think it means he's had a lot of radios.
Okay.
He enjoys doing all the stuff, you know, listening to scanners and he's like WWBH from Hawaii. Now he's also given a number of went to ham radio clubs and given, you know, talks about stuff like SDR, which he also has wrote, and he's a freelance writer, you know. He's written a couple of, like, magazines, like Tello Audio Vision, and what's that other one, Brian? He's
Spectrum
written
the Monitor, one. Yeah.
Yep, that one. And guess what else he is? He's a free-to-air enthusiast, so, hey.
Awesome.
looking forward to talking to this guy.
Well, then I look forward on asking him if he's, you know, done any of this SDR stuff on the satellite, because that's really kind of how my conversation on Satellite Guys started up, talking about software-defined radio. So it will be kind of interesting. Now, for those of you who want to kind of get on the internet and pull down some reading material to prep for the show tonight, if you go to the Teleaudiovision website and look for the current version of Teleaudiovision, that's the January 2015 version, that's number 1501. Our good friend Alexander Weiss makes those available for us to read free online. And then also, if you subscribe to the Spectrum Monitor, which is a great amateur radio magazine, there is an article on pages 13 to 17 in the Spectrum Monitor, also in January, where it's a very similar article than what's in Teleaudiovision, but Teleaudiovision has some pretty colored pictures.
Yeah, electric pictures.
All right, well, get ready to call into our live show. Today is January 21st, 2015, and let's go ahead and let's talk about any technology that's on your mind, but especially we're going to dedicate the conversation this evening to SDR, software-defined radios. So get ready to call in, and that's toll-free, 877-SAT-GUYS. That's 877-728-4897. International and unlimited calling plan listeners, please give us a call at 347-327-9319. One more time, 347-327-9319.
And don't forget, if you happen to miss Satellite Nation or you can't make it, you can always head over to satelliteguys.us, over to the radio forums, and you'll find archives to listen to. Every one of them's better. And also, we need to get more people involved in getting on our Facebook page and giving us some feedback. We didn't get a whole lot of feedback. We'd like to know what you want to hear. We're doing a good job, bad job, we want to know. And that's facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio. And if you want to keep up with what's going on with us, go ahead and go and follow us over Twitter at SatNat Radio.
Excellent. Well, I want to give a special thanks, like every week, to the people that make this show possible. And first of all, I want to thank Scott over at SatelliteGuys.us, and he runs Satellite Guys Radio. Hey, just want to thank you for giving us a wonderful forum, and then also for putting Satellite Guys Radio up there. Some great music up there, and then in the evenings there's shows like this for people that are interested in technology and the lovers later at night. Also want to thank Dave Wally Heights on Satellite Guys. He has a store called Got C-Band, and we want to thank him for letting us be on his IceCast audio server, which helps us get up on the satellite. Also want to thank Ralph Black with Access America. Now, Access America is available via streaming and also on Galaxy 19KU. And he and Mike Cole have a talk show right after ours at 9 p.m. Eastern, and that's called Sec Talk Radio. So right after our show's over, if you want to join in for a little more chat about technology, stay tuned. And that's also on Satellite Guys Radio. And then also, KE4EST, Michael, we want to thank you and your store and your success, www.nc-electronics.com, for helping pay the bills.
Don't forget, if you can find something in my store, go ahead and go check out Titanium Satellite at www.titaniumsatellite.com.
Now, this evening starts up the new segment, and this will be a weekly segment by David.
Yes, sir. Dave's going to start every week. We're going to have about a five-minute news clip of what's been going on. It's not really necessarily satellite, but we'll try to keep it that way, and, you know, what's going on technology. Anything, you know, major or earth-shaking or whatever we'll bring up. And I think he's got one thing on there tonight, doesn't he, Brian?
Well, you know, He has the prediction of something pretty catastrophic for the satellite community. So listen into this news. And Google, imagine, they're getting their fingers in something else. Do you want to listen to that now?
Yeah, let's go ahead and have a listen to that news clip that he did.
Welcome to the news with Dave, a.k.a. Wally HTS, on SatelliteGuys.us. All right, so finally, Dish Network and Fox News have reached an agreement. Fox News and Fox Business are back on Dish Network. We'll never know the terms of the agreement or what exactly happened. There's a lot of dirt, a lot of different opinions. If you want to check that out, read a little bit more, hey, check out the website, SatelliteGuys.us. And moving on, Google nears a major investment in SpaceX. What? Yeah. So Elon Musk, CEO of SpaceX, and if anybody knows anything about Elon Musk, that man can get some stuff done. The companies he started, like PayPal, who doesn't use PayPal, and SpaceX to lower the cost of shooting rockets into space, has some insane ideas that actually come true. And basically what he wants to do is build a worldwide satellite network to deliver low-cost satellite internet service to people that cannot get it right now. And I couldn't imagine living my life without the internet. And that's what he wants to do. And Google sees his vision. And according to the information, Google is in the final stages of investing in SpaceX after its own effort to create an internet satellite network unraveled. And I don't know exactly what that means. I couldn't find details what unraveled for the Google project, but something happened. The fact that SpaceX can be vertically integrated, not only build the rockets, but then build the satellites, that would dramatically lower the cost of putting satellites into space. And I think they're going to do it, and I think Google sees it, and I'm really excited about this. And we'll just have to see how it progresses, but this is just a rumor that Google is going to invest in SpaceX to make this happen. And on to new product news from American-based distributors, it looks like Tim over there at DMSI is coming out with a new first-strike meter. They've had a good success with the other models, and the new model is going to be the FS1-Pro HD. That's going to have a color screen, a spectrum analyzer, and they don't have many details out about it, but they do have some screenshots and what the meter will look like. It looks like the other first-strike meters, just in case you wanted to know. You can go to the website, firststrikemeters.com, and check that out. If I had to guess, I would say this meter is probably going to be retailing for about $300 to $350. We'll just have to wait and see. It will be out in 2015, so let's see how it works. Hopefully, they got some of the problems fixed with this one that the other ones had, where we'll be able to lock on to S2 transponders. But time will tell. C-band. It was the first frequency band to be allocated for remote communications when the satellite industry just got off the ground over a half a century ago. And if you're an FTAer, you know how many good channels are on C-band. But folks, we have a major, major problem. And what is that problem? Well, these billion-dollar bullies at the cell phone companies are lobbying intensely hard to the ITU to get that band reallocated for terrestrial mobile use. If that happens, C-band is dead. We will lose our C-band functionality completely. Think about the people that you hear who have problems next to cell phone transmitters right now. Yeah, that have major problems with interference. Think if C-band frequencies were all over everywhere. Would you ever be able to get a signal from space without having a 50-foot dish? No, it's not going to happen. And I need your help. I need everybody's help. We need to save our C-band. Please come over to satelliteguys.us. Come into the sticky form that says Save Our C-Band. Read all the information about it and get on the bandwagon to help us save C-Band. It's going to be a hard fight, but we got to win it. Because if you're an FTAer and you enjoy C-Band, well, then you need to help us fight, because otherwise we're going to lose it. Think in the past when Satellite Guys members got together and saved Discovery from going completely dark off C-Band. Yeah, remember when Motorola shut it down and Discovery was going to shut down the extra channels on HITS? But we rallied and we got them to not do it. Well, we need to do that again. We need to save our C-Band. So please, please take action, come over, read the information, and get on the bandwagon. We need to save our C-Band. Hey, this is Dave with the news. I'll check you out next week.
All right. That was a really good report. Boy, don't know what to make of that loss of the spectrum to cellular service. I hate when I hear about these grabs coming.
Yeah, no, I don't know about that. I didn't get a chance to research that, you know, see what my take was really on it. But I don't see it going away too soon. What do you think?
Well, you know, we really have some strong lobbying behind the satellite industry, because that is still one of the primary ways that cable head ends and other programming are distributed. And so, you know, when we've seen things like this come up in the past, you know, we've had a pretty effective front against losing those frequencies. So I certainly hope that this time around, you know, we can't just sit back and wait for something to happen to our benefit. And so I back Dave 100%. We got to get involved. So I saw that thread over at Satellite Guys, and definitely let's figure out how we can address this and make our voices heard as hobbyists, because, you know, we've seen what's happened when WiMAX and wide area Wi-Fi, which is just on the edge of C-band, you know, that's already interfering with our C-band reception.
Trying to crowd us out already, that's right.
Yep. Well, let's go ahead and segue on over to our guest this evening. Do you want to do the introductions, Michael?
Yeah, well, we'll go ahead and bring in Mr. Mario here. Like I said before, he's been doing this for, I think he's been in the SDR for a couple of years, but he's been in the radios for over 37 years, so he kind of knows what he's talking about. So good evening, Mario. Welcome to the show.
Okay, good evening, Brian, and good evening, Michael. It's an honor to be a guest on your show tonight.
Oh, truly an honor to have you on this show. We're really interested in learning first a little bit about who you are, Mario. What got you into radio? What got you interested in amateur radio, and then also into software defined radio?
Well, actually, it started way back, maybe in the late 50s when I got my first radio, which was a Crystal radio, which my mother bought me, and you basically tune this thing, and you basically just hooked one end of it to a cold water pipe, and you twisted a little knob on this thing, and you got radio stations. And this was probably 1959, and when I tuned in my first radio station, it was magic to me, and I've been hooked on it ever since. And then then from there, I went to listening to shortwave. My first receiver was a Transoceanic by Zenith, which was a very popular one back then. And then in the late mid 70s, when the CB craze was on, I went into CB and first AM and single sideband. Then I found out about amateur radio, and I thought, well, if I get my ham ticket, I could probably talk further. At that time, you know, and still with FCC, you can't talk further than 155.3 miles. Anything further than that is illegal. With a ham ticket, well, we didn't have that problem. And then I stayed in ham for a while, but I always had shortwave in the background. And SDR became interesting to me when I read an article, I think it was in Monitoring Times. It was about the one of the dongle radios that had come out. Yeah, the Fun Cube, right, the Fun Cube dongle. And then there was an article in QST about it. And I thought, well, you know, this sounds kind of interesting. I'd like to try it out. Now, I'm not, you know, I have a home computer. I'm not a very computer-literate person. But I, because these dongle radios aren't exactly plug-and-play. So it was a steep learning curve for me. But after a while, I was very comfortable with it. And it's really sort of jump-started my interest again in shortwave. There are some really interesting things that these little radios can do that a tabletop and a lot of your desktops can't do. So that's I've been hooked on these things. I've got four of them. I'm working on, one for each finger of the two hands here. I can't seem to get enough of them, but they all kind of work the same.
Let's kind of go back a step here. We kind of jumped into SDR. So software-defined radio. Most of us, our first radios, like you said, was a Crystal radio where, it hooked up to a water pipe and you could hear AM radio stations. Well,
that's right.
My first radio was probably a little transistor AM radio. I still remember it. I got into it at Goodwill when I was like 6 years old, and it was incredible. It was like the size of a book of matches, just slightly bigger, and it probably cost me all of $10 at the time, and I could listen to AM radio, and then I found out about shortwave. Well, all of these devices could only tune a specific frequency range and receive a particular type of transmission. So,
that's correct.
Mario, if you would, tell us, what is software-defined radio?
Well, software-defined radio is a blend of a radio receiver and a computer. Specifically with the dongles, the computer does things. Number one, it serves as a display for the radio. And what the computer also does via the sound card is it's able to give you the option of many different modes. as you were mentioning, the transistor radio only gave you AM. Well, with the software-defined radio, the major modes are all supported, like narrowband, wideband, FM, AM, upper and lower sideband, CW, and also adjustments of the volume, adjustments of the RF gain, your automatic gain control. That is all done on a dashboard on a computer. So the computer is sort of what the front of a regular radio would be. You don't have knobs and dials. You do everything with a mouse.
Now let's talk about if I was to go down and buy a shortwave radio or a scanner radio, how much would I probably pay for something that I could just listen and it would be reliable?
Well, I guess if you went down to your local Radio Shack, you could probably get one, $100, between $100 and $200. A shortwave radio, all depends, too. A shortwave radio could run you from maybe $19 up to hundreds of dollars. Whereas we're talking with one of these dongles, you can't buy these in a bricks-and-mortar store. You get them on the Internet. So with, for about $15 to $20, you've got yourself a receiver that covers from about, depends on the chip, anywhere from, let's say, 60 megahertz to about 1,700 megahertz. And then if you buy yourself go ahead.
So with all that coverage, it must be, if the device is only $19, then the software must cost a lot.
No. That's the nice thing. Now let's put it this way: if you don't have a computer, and you buy a dongle, then it's not cheap because you have to have a computer, right? And so most of us do have some kind of computer. So it's only cheap if you have a computer.
A great point.
if you don't have a computer, don't buy a dongle because that's only one small part of it. But if you already have a computer,
they can run. Yeah, they can run though on a tablet, or
yes.
Michael and I were talking. He's running his dongle on the Android A3 set-top box. So it doesn't have to be a dedicated powerhouse computer, does it?
No, I mean I run mine off a laptop, and I have a desktop, but I don't have an iPad, or an Android-based operating system. They're coming out all the time with new applications for these, and they're actually sort of reinventing the shirt pocket transistor radio in high power fashion.
Yeah, exactly what they're doing. Exactly right, and that's people have asked about it, but you can take and run it. One of those dongles right off of an A3, works pretty good. Go ahead, Marty.
Right,
you say something.
Yeah, it runs, and what power do these things use? Well, you plug it into a USB port, and it's powered by the USB port. It takes 5 volts, so there's no other wires to plug in into the dongle. One thing that Brian asked before was software. All the software for these is free. The Internet is a wonderful thing. We're living in a wonderful age. There are so many things out there that are for free. All this knowledge is for free
and
software. the software that you can use is all free, and it's all great. The two main ones are SDR Sharp and HDSDR, which I use a lot. Those are the only two. There's more out there.
And those are the two that I use as well. How about you, Michael?
What's that, Nat?
What software do you use on your dongles?
I use SDR Sharp.
Yeah.
But I've got both.
Now, I imagine you were saying that these dongles can be as low as, I think I paid $15 for mine when I bought it from New Electric last year. But I know that some software-defined radios cost much, much more. What is the difference, for somebody just getting into the hobby? Should I just go out and buy a very expensive SDR hardware, or should I maybe test the waters with one of these inexpensive dongles?
Well, I guess it all depends on your budget. Let's put it this way. These little SDR dongles are not going to replace a good quality tabletop. And I'm not going to recommend that anybody put their beloved tabletop radio on eBay, because these aren't going to replace it. And they certainly, now I do not have any of those high end radios, but I would imagine there's no comparison as far as the quality of the sound and the sensitivity and the selectivity of these little dongles. I mean, these
right.
are sort
and
of
I,
like
I just wanted to throw it. I just wanted to throw it out there because, you know, somebody
sure.
not knowing anything about software-defined radio, they're going to go out and they're going to look on Amazon, eBay, or some other site on the Internet, and they're going to say, whoa, what should I buy? So I think what you said when we were talking before the show, this is awesome because for free software and, I mean, next to free hardware, $15, $20 for the hardware, you basically have everything that you need except an antenna. They do send an antenna with these, but
I don't call that an antenna.
Well, you know, the great thing was it verified for me that the dongle was working because I was able to get my local FM radio stations off of it. But I don't think I'd push it any farther than that.
Nope.
Yeah, and actually, when I speak to people about the dongle, I've given them a couple of talks. And one of the things I suggest to them is the first thing that you want to do is tune it to the FM band. And if you could see FM stations on there, then you're successful. And then after that, I usually ask them to check out the NOAA weather stations that are on 162.4 to 162.55 megahertz to see if they can get those. And pretty much after that, if they can do that, then they're on their way.
If somebody was going to be starting this hobby this evening, what should they be looking for? We're talking kind of in tech geek speak here, but if they're to go on eBay right after we're done or they're supposed to go out on the Internet and look for something, what should they look for when they're looking for this SDR device? This SDR radio.
There's a couple places you could get them. They're on eBay, and there's companies like New Elect that sell them. That's where I bought my first dongle. First of all, you want to make sure you're not going to get ripped off, because
yes.
I can tell you this.
Yes.
I've seen some of these dongles for sale on eBay for for a penny, okay. And if you read the fine print, the shipping is $87.
Yeah.
Okay, now I can't think of any place on earth where it would cost $87 to ship a dongle, even from Antarctica. So number one, keep price in mind. Don't spend more than $25 for a dongle. The thing, too, with eBay you have to remember is that there's really no support after the sale, so you're basically on your own. You have to self-educate yourself. Now, if you deal with a company that may know the product, you can get some help. But it's look for something under $25. If you spend more than that, you're spending too much.
I'm not affiliated in any way with New Electric, but that's where I bought mine from, and if I can recommend a North American seller of a product that is invested in their product and is committed to providing great product, and they've made a couple changes to their units, like they do the protection so you don't get the EMF or the little surges taking out your system. They've done a couple little things with their dongles that isn't guaranteed when you buy it on the open market.
Yeah, let me interject this too. They do, does sell on eBay too, plus they got some sites. So if you get one from them, make sure when you go up there and it says, the eBay username, that's a good place to get if you like to use eBay. And also, you mentioned their $25. Now, they do have a new one now, like we was talking about, Mario, the Mini 2, they're calling it, from Mulek. And it's
yeah.
it's running for between $26 and $30, something like that. So
yeah,
it's a little bit more. That is still a good one.
Now,
yeah,
if we can address that, so there's this basic dongle, and it runs on a particular chipset. What is that chipset, Mario?
The chipsets that are the most – well, the chipset really consists of the modulator and the tuner. The modulator is – the tuner is really the chip, like the R820T is one of the more common tuners. And then there's the Alonix 4000. When I bought my first dongle from Newelec, and I'm not associated with them other than I'm a satisfied customer, my first dongle had an E4000 chip. And what was nice about the E4000, it covered from 64 megahertz to about 2300 megahertz. Now, if you buy a dongle that has the R820T chip in it, that runs from about 25 megahertz up to 1700 megahertz. So the only thing is, I don't think there's that many E4000s around anymore.
Right.
I think that they may have stopped producing those.
Right.
But
let's talk about that dongle for a moment. People are going to say, well, why are these dongles on eBay? Well, these dongles came out because people around the world wanted to watch television on their computers, on their laptops, on their
Correct.
Other devices. And so these little USB devices are actually television tuners for off-the-air television in other parts of the world that use the DVB terrestrial, DVB-T, standard. So these little dongles were sold everywhere, and they were sold on the market, I believe, for a year or two before people understood that you could actually do software-defined radio with them.
Yeah,
yeah, and we all, we should be very appreciative of these individuals who had the foresight to see the value of these dongles for wideband receivers. As you had mentioned, now these dongles are not, we can't use them in this country for television and radio reception. So the other thing is, I wanted to mention, when you buy one of these dongles, they'll come with a set of instructions, and a lot of times they'll have a little CD there that tells you how to set this up and how to install drivers. Those things there, you don't need them. Take that little DVD, and you can use it as a frisbee for a small dog or something like that. That's about, or maybe
no,
a coaster. Yeah, a coaster, and the instructions are useless. don't even bother looking at those, because you don't want to download those drivers. Okay, you want to go to SDR, the SDR Sharp website. That would probably be your first stop, and you'll get all the information on how to download the driver, which is usually Zadig. That will allow the computer to communicate with the dongle, and then you download SDR Sharp. And you need a good antenna. The antenna they give you is probably not very useful. That's a paperweight, pretty much. Are you going to want to hook up a halfway decent antenna if you can? Something bigger,
now,
something outside.
As somebody who maybe doesn't have a scanner antenna yet or anything, what are some examples of ways that people can check for signals before they go out and invest? And we're not talking about a lot of money. I have the Jetstream. It's a Discone antenna, and I paid $50 for it. It's a great wide area vertical antenna, and I know you have something very similar, don't you, Mario?
Yeah, I have a good old Radio Shack Discone. It's mounted on the roof, it covers, according to the specs, 25 to, I think, 1300 megahertz. It's very lightweight. The other thing too is there are a lot of folks out there that aren't able to put the antenna outside. And when I give talks on this dongle, I tell them, look, you can use an indoor antenna that was originally made for outdoors. If you have the room, you can do it. You can even homebrew an antenna. You'll certainly get better results. The old rule is the bigger the antenna, the better. The higher the antenna, the better. And outside is always better than inside. But then again, a lot of us have to work with compromises. So
right.
An indoor antenna.
something even as simple as just an alligator clip connected to a aluminum or a metal gutter, or flashing around the eave of a house. Any of these things, as long as they're not connected to ground, they're going to make a very acceptable antenna for, you know, just seeing if it works before you invest in anything.
And to make sure you play around with it and see if you like it.
Exactly.
Sure, and you know, there are also what they call active antennas, which basically is an antenna that has a built-in amplifier. They usually run off of a battery power, or they'll have a wall wart powered, and they're very good for individuals who can't put up an outside antenna, and those will work well also with the dongle. Or you can even just string a wire around the ceiling of a room. Correct.
Okay, so now you have this piece of wire, you have this antenna, and most of these little dongles have a little connection on them, and there's two types of connections on these. One is an SMA male, and that is a type that you typically will find, on cell phones and such. And then, and then there's another type of connection that is usually associated with terrestrial antennas. It's just a type of RF fitting. Off the top of my head, I can't remember.
An MCX.
MCX.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. So, those connectors will come on the little antenna that they provide with this dongle. For those of you who just want to cut and splice it into something, you already have your connector. But I then, right after I got my little SDR dongle, I went out, or DVB-T dongle, I should say, I went out and spent about as much money on adapters on eBay.
Yes.
I did the same thing.
The Alonix 4000 that I bought the first time actually had a PAL connector. But it looks like these MCX connectors, which are really, really tiny and very delicate looking. I agree with you. By the time you buy, you're going to want to buy, when you buy a dongle, you're going to want to buy the appropriate adapters to attach in the antenna that you have in the house.
And we're not talking very much money.
They're really $2 or $3.
Including shipping amazing. From China.
exactly.
Now, once you have an antenna, and we have little adapters to get in and out of the device, when you connect it up, you said the first thing that you suggest people check out is FM radio. Now,
That's correct. One thing
that kind of caught me, and I've noticed on the forums that's caught other people, is that the AGC, the automatic gain control, seems to be on by default, and you don't receive much when it's in that mode, do you?
Let me see here. I've got the dongle in front of me, and I've got SDR Sharp on the front. I'm trying to look here. You know what? The control that is most important is the RF gain, okay?
Right.
The RF gain is just like the RF gain control on your tabletop shortwave radio. If you turn it all the way counterclockwise, you'll not hear anything. You have to, depending on the station, usually keep it full blast. I mean, totally clockwise, unless you get a very strong station. So the thing is, and I've encountered this with folks that I've helped set these radios up. When they set it up, there's usually an option where you can look at the RF gain. That RF gain is very important. If you have it set too high, what's going to happen is you're going to get a lot of overload and a lot of spurious transmissions on here on the radio. So you have to fool with the RF gain quite a bit. Now, this is what I found out. When you're on a VHF or UHF, in general, I keep my RF gain up all the way. When you get down to the shortwave bands like HF and whatnot, you have to really lower that RF gain. Otherwise, you're going to get multiple states. The selectivity is going to be terrible. So that is a very important part. You don't want the RF gain all the way down. You'll hear nothing. If you have it too high, you're going to hear a couple of stations at the same time when you're on HF.
Right, and that what's called is overload the front end. If you have that RF gain too high, you are just going to swamp it, and it will not operate either. So unlike antennas, the bigger the better on antennas doesn't mean the higher the better on RF gain.
That's correct. You know, the thing also is there are so many controls that this you'll get option paralysis, really, with all the options that these that they have on SDR Sharp. I mean, it's going to be a learning curve. I mean, you'll be clicking on things, but you really can't break it. I mean, the worst thing you do is, you shut it off and start from scratch. But, I mean, for example, one of the things they have here is frequency manager. I mean, you can store an infinite number of stations on this thing, and it takes a little getting used to. You can also change the looks of the display. Now, what this thing will show you is a spectrum display about 2 megahertz wide, and it will also show you a waterfall, which is very nice. I mean, most tabletop radios don't have that, so you can actually, you've got a visual display of the stations that you are looking at, that are, you know, you're listening to. I mean, that's very
powerful. Right. Now, most of us who have been in radio for years are used to the old analog meters or maybe those LEDs bouncing back and forth showing the signal level. But when you're talking about the FFT display, boy, that shows, it's a waterfall of information that shows historical of what things are available in your tuning range. The cool thing about this, guys, is you're not having to manually input a frequency. You click anywhere on that spectrum display or anywhere on that waterfall, and it tunes what you see. And so it's kind of that visual representation of, hey, there's a signal. Click on it. I wonder what it is.
Yeah, and, you know, it's what I like about it is, since you could look at a 2 megahertz wide swath of spectrum, this is great for determining whether a band is open or what the maximum usable frequency is for the day. I mean, for example, today the CB band was open, and CB is around 27 megahertz. Then from there, I looked at, I went up one megacycle up to the 10 meter band, and I found out that indeed 10 meters was open also, and you could get an idea of activity just by looking at that 2 megahertz swath of spectrum.
Exactly. Hey, you know what? We have a caller right now, 772,
yes.
Florida area code. Area code 772. Go ahead. You're on Satellite Nation.
Hey, guys. Dick, what's going on? I caught a little.
Evening.
I don't want.
Hello.
Good. Hey, how you guys doing? I caught a little swath. I had to take an important phone call right after that. But Michael was saying something about putting the dongle in the A3. Now, I don't want to disrupt you guys from the course you're already on, but I sure would like to hear more about the dongle working on the A3 also.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty straightforward on it. You can go to the App Store and download. I'll put it in the show notes, but I'm trying to think what it's called, but I can't think of the name of the app off the top of my head. But download the app, and you download a driver, and you do it right from, or you get from your computer and send it to your A3, or do it right from the A3. And once you get the driver installed and run that, you just plug your dongle into the USB port, and there you go.
So you actually use it for radio, not for satellite. Okay.
Right.
And
okay, cool.
The neat thing is, though, you can also use it for looking at satellite. So, and I'll quickly just kind of briefly tell you how you can do that. You can use the loop out. So if you have a satellite receiver with a loop out on it, you connect that loop out to the dongle antenna input. Now, some people say that you should buffer that because some satellite receivers will send voltage out there and it will damage your DVB-T tuner, the little USB dongle.
Yeah.
So it might be best to put a voltage block on that, but you can use the loop through, or another way you can do it is you can put a splitter in line, just like you were slating second satellite
receiver.
Power
pass.
Mm-hmm. Right. Hey, we have somebody breathing heavy into the mic. I love
it. Hear that.
Thank you, but I think that's for a different show.
But Yeah, Michael, if you could make a note of, you know, what that app is. I think I saw something that on Sat Guys a while back, but I never followed through. But that would be interesting to, you know, use the A3. It does everything else.
Yeah, I wrote it.
Cool.
But yeah, I'll do that. You can go to Fridge FGA
Now. Can I say one thing? That's pretty bad. You can't remember the name of it, but you wrote it.
Well, actually, I'll take the blame for that. I was the one that loaded that app on my tablet, and I've been using that app out at my satellite dish to look at the satellite identification, which is right around 117 and right up around 122. And so you can actually see those IDs coming down from the satellite. And there's a couple other things. I've run across some audio stuff, SCPC stuff. There's only a couple satellites where that remains, but there's some interesting stuff, not just terrestrial, but also up on the satellite.
Oh, that's interesting.
Definitely like to try that. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling. Anything else this evening?
No, I want to thank you for the wideband PLO that I won. That was rather nice.
Congratulations. We'll talk about that on another show.
All righty.
Hey, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, we've talked about the technical part of it, but let's light people on fire. What are some things that you've heard up there, Mario?
When I got the dongle initially, I was just listening to VHF and UHF. I started out with FM, and then, you can listen to, if you're a scanner buff, and you can listen to, EMS, police, fire, with the dongle. You can listen to the NOAA weather frequencies. If you're a ham, you can look, you can use it for 2 meters, 440. There's even up at 900. I think we've got our hams will have a band on 902 megahertz. You can go that far up. And there's other software other than the dongle that you can use to decode things like radio teletype, Morse code, PSK31. I mean, for example, some of the things I heard today, actually over the past 24 hours or so. I mean, I was listening to WLO Shipcom on 8472 kilohertz, and they were running RIDI at the ham 45.45 board 170 hertz shift, and they were there was a notice to mariners about piracy and looking out for pirates and armed robbers in certain areas of the ocean, which was kind of interesting.
And so that's something you would never hear, but you saw it being displayed on your decoder, right?
That's correct. And also, if anybody's into Volmet, those are the aeronautical weather broadcasts. They're on. You can hear that. I heard Gander Radio today, and I heard Shannon, Shannon Volmet. I found out that the repeater on 29.620 megahertz, which is KQ2H, that's a 2 meter, I think, it's a 10 meter a repeater. And I heard Mexican hams work in hams in England. So there's a lot of interesting stuff. There's other programs like Multi PSK and FL Digi, which will allow you to decode digital transmissions from the dongle,
right,
aren't people
using that to see the airline tracking screens?
There's on 1,090 megahertz. That's pretty far up, but it's well within the capabilities of the dongle. There's a program called ADS-B and ADS-B Scope, and that will allow you to look at planes that are in your area, because what's happening is over a period of time, planes are going to have GPS tracking units on them. Some of them do. So you'll get an actual display of your state, and you can see all the planes in the area. That's interesting.
You'll get that in an app, too.
Androids. Yeah, that's a neat one. And hams who are into APRS, the Automated Packet Reporting System, their multi-PSK will decode APRS, so you can look at the information that are coming off you know, the APRS units. If you're an aeronautical fan, you can hear international flights on USB. I mean, it's just – oh, and also a digital differential GPS, which is down in the long wave. You can get information off of the GPS beacons. You can look at facsimile from all parts of the world, the Coast Guard stations and from England. If you can do it on shortwave radio, you can do it with the dongle. What's amazing, I found that the selectivity and the sensitivity of the dongles for the price is amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I did notice, if those of you who are long-wave fans that like to listen to the radio beacons down in from about 200 kilohertz to 500 kilohertz, I don't find the sensitivity that great. So, you know, of course, it could be my antenna, but I have a 43-foot vertical with about 50 radios in the ground.
For long-wave, that is like a – but for long wave, that's kind of like a toothpick trying to pick up
yeah,
a monster.
Yeah.
Well, but, and I also wanted to say to get below that 27 or 25 megahertz, this is where the up converter comes in. Now, the up converter simply takes those lower frequencies and maps them into the receiver so they will appear in the range of this DVB-T receiver. So the up converter is, I'm trying to remember how much I paid for mine. I have the ham it up as well.
Yeah, I think they run about $44 or something, and it's money, whatever the price was. I mean, it will increase your range from your dongle down to, I guess, about 150 kilohertz. I bought mine also from Newelec, and I'm thoroughly 100% happy with this unit. Now you need another the up converter runs off of 5 volts on its own, so you have to buy a little 5 volt power supply, which is not a big deal. And of course I think you need a few other pigtails that you have to buy to connect the dongle to the all right. So add that
yeah,
to the
I
list.
Think,
the laundry
I
list.
Think that one ran me a total of $3.49 for the SMA mail to MCX
right.
mail jumper.
Yes, that's correct.
But my head was spinning.
Yeah, you know, most people, you know, even hams, we're not used to, you know, we're used to PL-259s and SO-239s and BNCs. And so when you get to these MCX and these SMAs, it's all new to us. But it's no problem, you know. It's one of the least amount of things you have to worry about. Just get it hooked up, and I recommend if you're a shortwave listener, you know, spend the extra $44 when you buy a dongle. You'll not be disappointed because it's going to open up another world of listening. You'll basically be surgically attached to this thing. You'll enjoy
Let's
it
do
so
a recap.
Much.
We have about 5 minutes left here, so let's go ahead and kind of do a recap and make sure that we've given everybody all the information. So what you'll need to enjoy software-defined radio is a computer of some type, and most of us play around with it on a PC, but it works. There are apps also for the Android. Some people are doing it on Linux. I understand that some people are also have some Apple or some Mac running software as well.
Yes.
So you'll need a computer, and the software that we like is either called SDR Sharp, and that's abbreviated SDR with a pound sign, or
yep.
HDSR.
Yep.
And HDSR is kind of neat because it reminds me a lot of that set-top or the desktop radio that I used to have to listen to shortwave.
It's got a nice big S meter on it.
Yes, it does.
I love that one. And yep.
And is there something else that people will want to download software-wise?
Let me think. You know, there are a few other programs out there. that that the dongle will run off. I've tried a few. I don't remember the names, but I keep going back to SDR Sharp and HDSDR. They're really great.
Michael,
yeah.
have you found any others that you would like to share?
And I'm off the top of my head. I use most of those. I can't think of them either, but I've tried a couple other things and messed with them. But once you get into it and start, there's forums out there and places and start reading about it, you'll start finding stuff. And I did that app that I've been running on the A3 is SDR Touch, and you'll need to get the driver for it from the same place. Now, if you want to see the waterfall and everything on it, you'll have to pay $10. If you want to do that, I'm running it without it.
Okay, so waterfall will cost you $10. I sprung for the $10, so I don't know what the experience is without the waterfall.
I know.
That's well worth it.
Okay, so for somewhere around a really nice entry level one, it's going to be around $25-$30. The one
right.
that most of us invested in is going to be somewhere around $15 to $20. You're going to want to get some free software. You're going to want to have a simple antenna. The one that comes with it, you're going to see if it works because you're going to see an FM radio station. You'll also probably hear your weather channel, like Mario suggested. The main thing is, though, you're going to want, if you have any interest in playing around with this, figure out the best way that you can have an antenna at your place, because there's not much you can do with these unless you have some sort of metal somewhere to pick up signals from somewhere. Now, the final thing is, there's a lot of Google search words out there. I'll throw a couple out if you guys want to add to it. Heavy breather. Try searching for dongle, USB, DVB-T, SDR. What are some other terms that you might suggest?
The Freight 20, TL-2832.
RTL-SDR. I'm not sure what the RTL means, but that'll get you a lot of hits. That's also good for eBay if you want to look for those.
Yep.
Okay. Hey, we're rapidly running out of time here, so I'm just going to go ahead and thank Mario. You've been an excellent guest. Would you come back on again sometime and tell us more about software-defined radio?
Oh, I'll be happy to. And as things, I'm always learning new stuff about this, and we'll come back with some new and interesting things
found
out about SDR.
And if you want to read up more about what Mario Felipe has been writing, check out this month's edition, the January issue 2015 of Tele Audio Vision, and also the Spectrum Monitor. So thank you so much for being with us this evening, Mario.
Oh, thank you also. I'm happy to be on the show.
All right, Michael, put a bow on it.
All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Same time, same place. Good night.
Satellite Nation, good night.
Thanks to all that tuned in tonight. Join Satellite Guys Michael and Brian next Wednesday for another informative episode of Satellite Nation. And don't forget to like our page at facebook.com/Satellite Nation Radio. Until next week, good night. We'll be right back.
Hey, Brian and Mike, are you still there?
Yeah.